Okay, if we can have the PowerPoint. Thank you very much, Paul. We are this morning continuing our series of Paracelsus. We're in the fifth week, Paracelsus, journeying together, looking at how we can draw alongside others who are going through tough times. And today's sermon is called Strong at the Broken Places. And that title comes from a book by Ernest Hemingway, A Farewell to Arms, where he writes, "The world breaks everyone, and afterwards many are strong at the broken places." None of us escape broken places on our journey through life. Those places where we meet trials and difficulties that derail a smooth passage through life. Broken places can remain a weak spot, a weak point, a vulnerable point in our lives. Or they can become a strength forged through the furnace of adversity, a strength for the journey through life. And if then we can, in our turn, journey with others at their broken places, then we can bring strength. Then we can bring strength and healing to them for their journey. Today we're turning our Paracelsus diamond once more and seeing yet another slightly different translation of the same word, different meaning of the same word. And this time it's to comfort. Paracelsus meaning to comfort. So Paul writes to the Thessalonians, comfort each other, or parakaleo each other, and make each other strong. Think about strength in broken places. Comfort each other and make each other strong. Today the word comfort we generally think of as consolation, and we looked at consolation a few weeks back in the week three of Paracelsus. But the word comfort means a lot more than consolation. Some of you might have seen this illustration or remember it from your history lesson. In the Bayeux Tapestry, there's this frame where the Norman bishop, Bishop Odo, comforts his young men, it says. He's the one brandishing the club. It's not a there. It's a come on. The word comfort comes from com with fortis, fortitude or strength. So Paracelsus comfort means coming alongside, bringing strength to build up, restore and repair. And hence, let's go back a couple, comfort each other and make each other strong. So as we journey alongside others, we're called to strengthen them in their journey. Paracelsus comfort is coming alongside somebody at a broken place in their lives and journeying with them to strengthen and build them up, helping them find healing, wholeness, inner strength. So Paul can write to the Corinthians, "Everything we do, dear friends, is for your strengthening." To the Thessalonians, "We sent Timothy to strengthen and encourage you in your faith." And today, in our gospel passage, we have the story of the crippled woman, and we see Jesus bringing her strength for the journey. So we're on page 1046 in the Church Bibles, Luke chapter 13, and I'm going to read the passage again, beginning at verse 10. "On a Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman was there who had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said to her, 'Woman, you are set free from your infirmity.' Then he put his hands on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God. Indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue ruler said to the people, "There are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath." The Lord answered him, "You hypocrites, don't each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her?" When he said this, all his opponents were humiliated, but the people were delighted with all the wonderful things he was doing. The woman had a pretty pitiful existence. She'd been like this for 18 years, bent double. That morning, coming into the synagogue, she had hobbled in painfully, bowed down. And as Jesus taught, his eyes fell on her, and he called her forward. And you can just imagine her shuffling her way forward, trying to see Jesus. She also had a physical affliction. She was a deformed, distorted, disabled bundle of humanity. Her spine had fused and locked her into that position. Today, this condition is commonly known as ankylosing spondylitis, a kind of arthritic condition that deteriorates over the years. Clearly, I'm no medic, but I gather that it's a chronic, progressive ossification of the spine. The bones just keep growing, fusing together in the spine. And the woman was trapped in this physical condition. But thirdly, Luke tells us that she also had an infirm spirit. Now, you might think, actually, verse 11 says she was crippled by a spirit. The word translated by the NIV, crippled, in verse 11, is the same word that it translates at the end of verse 12 as infirmity. So it's one and the same word. The Greek word literally means a lack of strength or a weakness. So she had a weak or infirm spirit. Luke, who was a physician, Dr. Luke, who wrote this account, observes that she not only had curvature of the spine, but she also had an infirm spirit, a disabled spirit, a weak spirit. And somehow the two were interlinked. She had an external physical deformity and an internal weakness or infirmity. A physical affliction with a spiritual disability. Now, I'm by no means saying that all physical afflictions are linked to a spiritual cause. But here, Dr. Luke looks behind what his eyes can see and perceives something much deeper, an infirm spirit. And though he uses that phrase, there's no suggestion here of demon possession. There's no suggestion of that in the passage. But Jesus does go on to say in verse 16 that she had been bound or tied up by Satan. Her spirit was weakened because it was bound, because it was tied by the devil. Maybe it was weakened because it couldn't be exercised because it was bound. Then Jesus says in verse 12, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." The word that we have as set free, is my rope gone? And hence the illustration earlier on. The word that we have as set free is really, literally, to loosen bonds that tie, you know. And it was also used as a medical term that meant unbandaging unbinding the bandages around a wound. We'll come back to being tied and untied shortly. In Job chapter 7, the message paraphrases what Job says as this: life is a struggle, isn't it? It's a life sentence to hard labour. Life is a struggle. It's not a surprise when it happens. Often when we're journeying with somebody who's going through difficult times, we find that, especially if it's gone on a long time, that something has wounded or damaged their spirit, and their life is now a struggle. Through life, they've wrapped bandages around the wound, so hopefully others don't see it. But as you listen to their story, you may see that underneath, often seeping through the bandages, is an open sore, a wounded spirit. And as we explore and understand their journey, we begin to find that underneath there are some debilitating broken places in their lives. And if we're to journey with them, we'll have to understand those weaknesses, understand those infirmities, which Jesus models for us. In Hebrews 4:15, it says that in Jesus we have a high priest who is touched by the feelings of our infirmities. That's the AV translation, King James. The NIV has, who is able to sympathise with our weaknesses. Again, infirmities equals weaknesses. Jesus understands what it's like. He clearly didn't have a weak spirit himself, but he's able to sympathise with how our inner world affects our external world. How our spirits have a significant impact on our bodies. He understands our weaknesses. There's a book called None of These Diseases by two Christian medics. And they talk about holding things in our spirit, like anger and guilt and hatred, fear, stress, resentment, bitterness, that actually release chemicals into the bloodstream and into our nervous system that then get conveyed, if you like, from our spirit into our bodies, prompting physiological reactions in our bodies. Our spirits are not built to hold such weaknesses. God didn't create us for weakness. And there is no inbuilt shock absorber, as it were, for such weakness. So a wounded spirit throws off such weaknesses into the body. Now, something crippling had clearly happened in this woman's spirit that had impacted her body. Her outer deformity is being linked with her inner infirmity. To a spiritual origin rather than a physical one. If we're going to have any insight into understanding infirmities, we must be aware of the danger of being too superficial about it, being too quick off the mark. It's spiritual discernment, not just an off-pat remedy here. The prophet Jeremiah said of priests and people, prophets and priests alike, all practice deceit. They dress the wound of my people as though it were not serious. Peace, peace, they say, when there is no peace. This word for peace, shalom in Hebrew, means wholeness, completeness, everything being as God intended it to be. But here's the indictment by Jeremiah that in the house of God, the message of wholeness might have been delivered, but it wasn't, might have been declared, but it wasn't being delivered. Things weren't as God intended them to be. And they were just saying peace, peace, as a superficial dressing, like sticking a sticking plaster on a gaping wound. People are like icebergs, only revealing the tip. We're all like it, aren't we? We only show what we want other people to see of what's going on inside us. And there's a lot more going on beneath the waterline. If we're going to journey with people through their broken places, through their wounds, we need to see more, understand more what's beneath that waterline. Again, this is modelled by Jesus. Speaking of Jesus, Isaiah the prophet says, he will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears. And we see Jesus putting that into practice, talking to the Pharisees, where he says, yeah, like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of dead men's bones and everything unclean. Gentle Jesus, meek and mild. Jesus sees straight through the external appearances into what we were looking at last week, the inner world, the sukha, the psyche, the inner world of our spirit. Dr. Luke saw this woman's condition, but saw beneath the waterline to what was going on inside. And in order to come alongside and journey with others, we need to start looking below the waterline and recognise that what we see, the bios life that we were talking about last week, the external life, comes out of the inner life. Firstly, recognising that all of our behaviour has its causes. We do what we do because something motivates us to do it. And that determines our behaviour. Our lives are multi-layered, aren't they? And journeying with people, we might need to recognise that beneath the external behaviours, there's often a wounded spirit. And to help them, we need to acknowledge those places where the spirit has become wounded. Stuff happens on the journey through life. It happens to all of us. And our spirits get fractured, damaged, broken, bruised on the anvil of life. There are many broken places, common types of broken places that you may have personally experienced or seen in others. Most obviously, broken relationships, family, marriage, peers, friends, church, colleagues. People hurt one another. It's a fact of life. Sometimes it's totally unintentional. Sometimes people just lash out and hurt one another. It's broken dreams. We often live with goals, promises, expectations of what is to come. Thinking, yeah, our life is going to turn out a particular way. And just, that's what we're focused on. That's what we expect. And then promises get broken by people. Goals are unmet. Expectations unrealised. And people's hopes and aspirations get dashed. Dreams shattered as a result. Broken relationships, broken dreams, broken hearts. Maybe caused by the loss of a loved one. Maybe by childlessness, abortion, unrequited love, painful breakup, divorce, being betrayed in a in a marriage or close relationship. They wound our spirit with sorrow and sadness. Broken hearts and broken self-image. Identity and self-image can be broken by others through the impact, psychological impact, emotional impact, verbal impact of what they say, do, how they behave towards us, maybe bullying, humiliation, ridicule. If we are rejected by others or denigrated, that hurts. And it causes a badly damaged sense of self-worth inside and low self-esteem inside. It damages our spirit, which was not meant to cope with that. Because it's sin that causes that hurt. And in that case, other people's sin towards us. Broken heart, image, broken cisterns. Those of you who don't know Jeremiah are thinking, what on earth is he going on about? The Lord said to Jeremiah, "My people have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed themselves out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water." A cistern was a large tank for holding water cut out of rock. And if it was a broken cistern, if it was cracked, the water would drain out slowly over time and just leave sludge and mud at the bottom. And it's a picture of our lives when we try and satisfy ourselves on anything other than God, the living waters, the fountain of living waters. Rather than drinking from that fountain, we find ourselves wallowing in mud and sludge. How many cisterns have people drunk from that don't truly satisfy? Possessions, wealth, pornography, status, drugs, alcohol. They may promise to satisfy, but they're broken cisterns. And when we drink from them, we end up wallowing in the mud and the sludge. We'll be broken. Broken cisterns that never satisfy. And then clearly broken bodies when something physiological happens inside. And a long-standing severe illness, incurable disease and injury sometimes go on unrecognized beneath that waterline. So if we're exploring beneath the waterline, we also need to explore the pool of pain. A broken place produces a wounded spirit, and a wounded spirit produces around it a pool of pain. And how we deal with our pool of pain determines our journey. Maybe the pain of disappointment, of loss, humiliation, shame, rejection, guilt, regret, sickness, can all be debilitating. And what we tend to do is to wrap bandages around the wounds, wrap bandages around our lives, trying to ease the pain through the way we behave or our lifestyle choices. We may think we can heal the pain, but it's actually the wounded spirit underneath that needs healing. And only when the wounded spirit is healed will the pain dissolve. So we need to identify that wounded spirit. As I say, we weren't created to bear a wounded spirit. We weren't created to bear the impact of sin. God created us with a whole spirit. And a wounded spirit, as with the woman in this reading, throws itself off in physiological and psychological patterns within our bodies. Our behaviours are actually coming out of that pool of pain that surrounds the unhealed wound. So if we are to become strong at those broken places, we need healing. For a wound not to remain a wound, healing has to take place. And the wound doesn't disappear. The wound leaves a scar where it was. Without healing, we end up living with an open wound. But if we journey with others through their broken places, we can help them process the pain of the wound until the wound heals and becomes a scar. By coming alongside others and working with those hurts below the waterline, we can help them heal and unwind those bandages that they've applied. But they can only do so by applying the ointment of God's grace. Hebrews 12:15, this is the J.B. Phillips paraphrase, says, "Be careful that none of you fails to respond to the grace which God gives. For if he does, there can very easily spring up in him a bitter spirit, which is not only bad in itself, but can also poison the lives of many others." Notice, if we don't respond to God's grace, a wounded spirit poisons our life and those around us. A bitter spirit is toxic. If we don't deal with it, we'll become a toxic, bitter person. In 2 Corinthians 12, Paul talks about his own journey and talks about a thorn in his flesh as a weakness. So a thorn was some kind of infirmity that Paul carried in his body. And he wanted to be free from the pain and the poison that that was causing within. And he asked God to deliver him from this thorn three times. And each time God didn't take the thorn away. He said to Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you." And after the third time, instead of responding to the pain of the thorn, Paul embraces the grace of God and his wound healed and became a grace scar. And having received grace, he declares, "For Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardship, in persecution, in difficulties, for when I am weak, then I am strong." At his broken place where he's been wounded, where he has been healed by God's grace, he is strong at that broken place, stronger than he was before. And therefore he's not saying, "Lord, give me a comfortable life without any broken places." He's accepting the broken places because he knows that as he responds to God's grace poured into his life at that place of brokenness, he will be strong. "For where I am weak," "then I am strong." Also think about responding to God's grace. It's really important that we take a pathway of forgiveness and forgiveness to those who've wounded us, who've broken us, who've caused us that pain. Forgiveness is a choice. And it's a key part of receiving God's grace at that broken place. In Colossians 3, Paul writes, "Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you." We can choose whether or not we respond to God's grace. He's promised to supply a source of grace that overflows any pain any wound. He said, my grace is sufficient for you. Forgiving, he's forgiven us in Christ. Every wound that we have caused his heart by our behaviour, by our rejection of him. Forgiving as we have been forgiven sets us free from our past. It heals us of our wounds and it releases us from our pain. Helping others to think through God's forgiveness strengthens them at that broken place so that they can forgive others. The opposite, unforgiveness, bitterness, they incarcerate us. They put us in a prison of that broken place. They hold us in the broken place. They never rehabilitate our lives. Holding bitterness and resentment in our spirit is like us drinking poison and affecting the one who's hurt us to die. Holding unforgiveness in our spirits is inflicting a wound on ourselves. That pool of pain becomes a poisonous pool around us. And we are the ones whose lives are damaged as a result. Forgiveness is choosing to let go and choosing to embrace grace. Probably you're aware that a pearl comes from pain. A piece of grit gets inside the oyster and becomes a place of pain, and the oyster releases a soft liquid around this bit of grit, whether it's a bit of sand or whatever, and that soft liquid gradually hardens and becomes smooth and shiny, a pearl. That soft liquid is like God's grace and forgiveness around a point of pain. Forgiveness turns pain into a grace pearl, if you like, and a wound into a grace scar. In life, we will always face broken places. All of us will, as Hemingway said in the quote I mentioned at the beginning. We can either react to the problem or respond to God's grace. We can either become bitter or better. We can either be left with a sore or a scar. Back in the synagogue, Jesus calls the woman forward and places his hand upon her, the hand of grace, the hand of mercy, the hand of love, the hand of healing. And something happens in her spirit. And suddenly, instead of looking at his feet, she finds herself looking at his face. Lift your eyes and gaze at the cross. Because the message of the cross is not only that God saves and forgives us our sin, but also that he heals us of our infirmities. He heals our wounded souls. And when we come to him, recognizing that pain comes from those wounds, and when we're willing to take off the bandages and let the wounded healer, who for our sake suffered more than we can ever imagine, letting that wounded healer reach out his hand and touch us and touch our lives, then we can find healing. And after that, we can then come alongside others and journey with them, helping them take their bandage off, helping them find healing. And that's paraclesis comfort at work, coming alongside with comfort, strength, with strength, com fortis, with strength, the strength of God, so that they may become strong at the broken places. May we be a church that reaches beyond these walls into the brokenness of the lives that we meet on a day-by-day basis out on our front lines. May we be coming alongside people and leading them to the healer whose name is Jesus. Let's pray.